This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. With both desktop and mobile access at any time, head to the BetOnline today and use our promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Tiger Miley Report podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I'm Rahul Hilliard. Alongside me is Chris Brown. And before we get to our guest, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find all our content over at TigersMLReport.com. We want to bring in our special guest from MLB.com. And so there's so many titles to you, Sam. So, I mean, can we add color commentator to you now? I mean, is that something that we could see in the future?
I do a little bit of it. It seems weird to describe myself that way, but I mean, it is a job I have performed recently. So sure, I'm not gonna tell you no, I guess.
And Sam Dykstra from MLB.com joins us. And we always have, we have a first time guest. There's a question we always ask because to us, we love talking baseball. So Chris, take it away on the question.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for joining us. So we always like to hear about your earliest baseball memory, if there's something that sticks out.
Yeah, I mean, there's like so much that sticks out. There's like T-ball games and stuff like that. I think the thing that immediately comes to mind, I grew up in Massachusetts, so I grew up a Red Sox fan. And I remember having a Jose Canseco Red Sox poster, which seems very vintage now. You don't think of Jose Canseco as a Red Sox player. And I also remember Nomar Garciaparra's rookie season in 1996. And the way I remember it is this way, which is a very weird way to remember it. But he was the rookie of the year in the American League. Scott Rolen was the rookie of the year in the National League. I thought that made them rivals forever. So for years, I hated Scott Rolen because I was like, well, he's Nomar's rival. Like, Nomar represents the AL for the rest of time. Scott Rolen represents the National League. It took me years to get over that. And I mean, that was part of my learning process about baseball, but it was mostly just stuff around my family. I mean, my mom grew up in Massachusetts. I remember walking through malls with my grandma asking, when are the Red Sox going to get back to 500? That's also aging me a little bit. Little stuff like that along the way. I don't have like one specific moment of like, oh, this is where it dawned on me that the game is going to be a big, big part of my life. It's a lot of those little moments that have slowly built up over time and gotten me here.
No, that's perfect kid logic, I think. Yeah. Assuming you were a kid, you were like 15 and 19, I've done that stuff when I was an adult. Like I remember when 2005, I think it was, that the Tigers took Cameron Maben, the high school outfielder, and then Andrew McCutchen went a couple picks later, and it was always like, oh, who's going to be better? And then it, you know, ended up being McCutchen. And the same thing happened with a couple years later with Jacob Turner and now Tiger Shelby Miller, you know, these high school right-handers, who's going to end up being better. And then Miller got there first, I think Turner actually got there first, but then, never really stuck. But no, that's funny. I've got tons of memories like that from being a kid, like inventing fake rivalries or not really, seeing where they come into play. But so yeah, you just got done with the spring breakout. You were doing, if people recognize your voice, you were the color commentator for most of the game there. You know, there was a couple interviews that kind of edged you out maybe a couple times, but what was that experience like for you?
I mean, that was super fun. It was super fun just to get be a part of the inaugural spring breakout, working here at MLB Pipeline. I've gotten to see how that event started and how many discussions there were about what it would look like, and to see it eventually come through the way it did, was really something special. I mean, there were every game between Arizona and Florida felt like a miniature version of the Futures game. So to be there for the Tigers Phillies, that felt especially true for that. Not only because it was one of the few games that was actually nine innings, which I definitely enjoyed and I was grateful for, but you look at who came through. I mean, Jace Young hitting two homers is huge. Brant Herder starting out that game pretty solidly. Mick Abel on the Phillies side, you know, giving up a homer to Jace Young, but still showing swing and miss stuff. Justin Crawford reaching twice, stealing bags. Dylan Dingler being really special behind the plate, which we all knew that's, you know, the biggest part of his game. It was just exactly what that event should be, which is, hey, you hear about these minor leaguers all the time. They may be in Lakeland, they may be in Erie, they may be all over the place, but for one day, here they are on the same field. And guess what? A lot of these scouting reports on these guys are true. Jace Young has a lot of power. Dylan Dingler's a really good defender. Mick Abel has a really good fastball. So Wilmer Flores really is up to 99 right now. I just had a blast with it. It was so much fun calling that game with Dan, and I'm glad we got such a good game like we did.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, you look at Crawford, too, which is his speed down the line, exciting player to watch for the Phillies. And you've been in camp for a little while now, Sam, and there's been the Tigers prospect, and you mentioned this on the broadcast, and this is something that's been happening more. The Tigers, for the first time, as an adult, really, that the Tigers have some depth to their system. There's actual, it's not just pitching depth, it's also hitting depth, too. So among you just mentioned some of the names too, but it just seems like, I mean, for example, a great story comes to mind is Justice Bigby, who has been him in between Eddie's Leonard, who they acquired cash, but still to recognize the talent and then to be able to see that, what Tiger players maybe under the radar just overall have really impressed you so far?
Yeah. I don't know if Josue Briseño is like under the radar, especially on a show like this, and I get that, but like as a national writer, I don't think the book is out there quite yet on him. So it was really cool to see him have a huge exit velocity there on Saturday. I mean, like the bat is really good. Talking to AJ Hinch before the game, his eyes like got super large just talking about Briseño of, yeah, that guy really fills out a uniform. He looks terrific. He is super young, but we think he can handle opportunities put in front of him. Yeah, there are some questions about him defensively. He might end up at first base long term, but like the bat being what it is, the fact that he's already putting up EVs like he is, I think he could be in for an even bigger year than his 2023 that really put him on the map. It wouldn't surprise me if we see him as a top 10 Tigers prospect by the end of the year. He just needs to do it for a full season. But everything I heard at Tigers camp, everybody I've talked to, what I got to see myself, was really special. One other name I'll throw out there. You talk about guys they brought into the system, Blake Dickerson, who they acquired from the Padres in kind of an odd deal, I would say, trading, I think it was $500,000 in international money. They just, you know, the Tigers had extra money. The Padres were trying to sign somebody else. They signed Leo Dallas DeVries, the top international prospect on the market. They didn't have much left. So they had to give up Dickerson, who is now the number 29 prospect in the Tiger system. He was a 12th round pick last year. Kind of overlooked that. He's 6'6". He's got three solid pitches in his fastball, slider, and changeup. Tigers really like what they've seen out of him so far, and now they get to direct his development. And when you look at some of the wins that they've had with pitchers, you know, somebody like a Brant Herder or, you know, Sawyer Gibson Long or on down the line, I'm really interested to see what they can make out of Blake Dickerson. They get to control him for the long haul now and develop him how they want. And that's a really interesting deal for just $500,000 international money.
They've got kind of a small little stable of very large, you know, recent high school pitchers down there in the lower levels of the minors. Last year they had, you know, Paul Wilson was, I think, their third round pick, maybe second round, third pick overall. And then Andrew Dunford and Cenk Diaz. I don't know if you saw any of those guys. And they also have his name is Dylan McCall, who they got out of Colorado a couple of years ago, who's like 6'9". All these dudes are giant. So I'm really curious to see what they can do with them over the next couple of years. So yeah, Dickerson's just adds to it, right? He's 6'6", right? That's
Yeah. I mean, so there's tons of projection there. It's just an average fastball now, but you could see it getting somewhere eventually. I mean, Wilmer Flores, that was always been his thing, right? Since they signed him, is that he was big and like hopefully he adds some velocity. And I know it's wavered back and forth, but him getting back to that 98-99 range right now. Bringing him in as the closer, I think, was the perfect call in that breakout game. I loved that they did that. And anybody who knew Tigers prospects, the second he was coming out, you're like, oh, we're about to see flames. That's what's going to happen. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do with Dickerson, but they have a pretty good track record now of these big-bodied guys squeezing out the velo that those guys need.
And speaking of Flores, too, one of the things that, I mean, this is the velocity's coming back. I mean, last year, or in 2022, he was pretty high on the MLB pipeline, and then he fell off a little bit. There was a couple starts last year in Double A where we were noticing he kind of labored a little bit. And I thought it was maybe perhaps trying to throw the change up too much, because I know there was a pitch he's trying to develop. He lost some weight, and it seems like the Tigers are setting him up where you look at the injury to Tyler Madson, who's out for the year now. And I think now it puts him as the best relief prospect. And I'm not sure if the Tigers still view him as a starter, or the swingman in Toledo, but I just think that, like, their Saturday was the announcement of, hey, this is going to be, he's going to be reliever with that. I mean, with the fastball, but I'm just kind of nervous about the curveball and slider getting that swing and miss stuff still.
Yeah. I mean, I think the curveball can still be a potential plus pitch. We'll see how that kind of comes around. I hear what you're saying in terms of, like, giving him that closing job felt like, oh, this is where we want you used to this moment. He's still only 23. Like, that's a little early for me to pull the relief card for him. I know the innings backed up last year, the velo backed up. And even Ryan Garko said this, you know, when I talked to him, like, we don't want him throwing 99 just in March. We want him throwing 99 in May, June, July, August. Like, now we have to make sure he maintains this. It seems like they really were enthused by the strength that he put on in the offseason that's allowed him to do this. It's not just pulling magic out of a hat. It's not just because he has a fresh arm. It really is coming from added strength. So I think you keep running him out as a starter as long as you can until he's in Toledo and they look at it and they're like, all right, well, you know, there's no other spot for you. We're going to put you in the bullpen and maybe someday you'll elbow your way into the rotation. I don't think they're there yet. It could come. I would love to see what he could be as a reliever, and maybe he's bumping 101 in even shorter stints. But I think right now they want to keep him elongated as long as they can.
Yeah, and we touched on, you know, Brant Herder started the game. He wasn't he's pitched a fair amount in spring training already. I don't know if, you know, fans have seen him a ton, but it wasn't necessarily a surprise to see him out there. And same goes for Ty Madden, but Troy Melton was, I think we knew he was pitching, but it was a pleasant surprise to see him back on the mound, because he left early last season before the end of the season, he had a kind of a undisclosed injury and didn't pitch again. So it was nice to see him back on the mound. And I think on the broadcast, you mentioned that they have him working on a curveball. Do I have that right?
Troy Melton, they have working on a curveball.
Did I mispronounce Melton? I'm sorry. That's what I meant.
Well, for Brant Herder, I'll just start with him. I think they started him because they talk about him a lot. Like, anytime you talk about who are you most enthused about from 2023, and they're like, oh, we really think Brant Herder took a step forward. And, you know, it's a good three pitch mix. He's a supremely pitchability lefty. Again, another tall guy at 6'6", but 118 innings last year at Erie. Like, you look at where they got him in the draft, it was seventh round. You shouldn't still be talking about those guys as potential starters at this point. I know, you know, he was only drafted 3 years ago at this point, but typically you don't see seventh rounders stick as starters this long. So I think they wanted to kind of push him out first and show, like, hey, listen, this is a guy we truly believe in. He throws strikes from a big frame. He's been working on his changeup this spring. So that really needs to kind of come around and turn the corner. But the pieces are there for Brant Herder to be a number five starter. And that's a huge win as a seventh round pick. Troy Melton, who you were talking about, that's somebody they have added, or they're trying to add the curveball to, just to give it another vertical option. Cause he's got that slider that's going east, west, add the curveball going north, south. I think they really like where he was last year, fourth round pick, 6'4", only 23 years old. They were a little, I don't want to say passive, but I don't love guys like him starting out at single A. I know there were only so many spots and you want to get him innings, and it was only seven starts there. I wish he was at West Michigan all season long. The fact that he had a 2.48 ERA there in the second half proved he belonged there. So I think now we're going to see him challenged a little bit more. Hopefully he's starting out the year at Erie we'll see how things kind of shake out. But I think adding that curveball gives them a little bit more verticality, something else for batters to think about, so they're not just sitting east-west on them.
Yeah, because one thing we noticed when he got to West Michigan last year, I think it was – there was like – I think, Chris, we went to his first two starts, was it? Yeah, we went to his – Yeah, first one. And we noticed that right away he made the adjustment really quick from going down in Lakeland where – I mean, in Lakeland, let's face it, in single A, there wasn't really much – I don't want to say – I'm not trying to be fair here to say the competition was a lot different. It was night and day. But once – team started sitting on him a little bit. He made those adjustments, and we saw him again in South Bend, and he was able to start at least mixing up his secondaries better. And so, no, Melton was a story that really came out of last year, similar to Bisseño. So now you look at some guys in the camp that I personally like. I like Jaden Hamm quite a bit. I know they haven't, you know, that's a guy who I personally think might be a breakout, underrated breakout guy that's going to break out a guy who's going to break out this year. And turn some heads. Sam, is there anybody that you saw in camp or you talked to Jason? Because I know Jason and I, every time we talk, we'll just try to exchange notes. But there's somebody else that the organization was telling you that really stood out to them?
I mean, yeah, I think Bisseño was the one that continually came up in conversations. But, he kind of already broke out. But, yeah, it's funny you mentioned Hamm. I was looking at his data the other day. I mean, the induced vertical break on his fastball is crazy, crazy good. I think it was around 20 inches or so. I don't have that data right in front of me. And if that's your starter kit, like, that's terrific. And he's not on our top 30 now. I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on him in terms of, like, where does he take that pitch moving forward? Because that's where everybody's talking about now. What's your ability to pitch at the top of the zone? Can you get swings and misses there? And if he's getting 20 inches of IVB, I mean, he could get swings and misses at any level with the rising stuff like that. So he's definitely on my list of somebody I'm going to continually check in on early on in the season. And we're probably going to have some early graduations. I mean, you look at like Parker Meadows is considered a prospect still. He's going to come off pretty quick. Gibson Long has, I know he's injured right now, but like he has major league experience. He'll probably graduate off. We have some guys waiting in the wings, but I could easily see Jaden Hamm joining at some point in the first half.
And now you guys split up the top 30s at Pipeline, right?
Yes. Yeah. Typically, so it's me, myself, Jim Callis, and Jonathan Mayo. We oversee 10 systems each. The Tigers are one that I oversee. That being said, Jason Beck. So I do the top 100 guys. So I wrote up Jace Young, Max Clark, Jackson Jobe, Colt Keith. And then Jason Beck takes it from there. He talks to a bunch of people. He puts together the rest of the top 30. I edit it. I talk to him about it. You know, we make some tweaks. If I'm hearing stuff different, it's a collaboration in that way. And then once that process is done and we publish it, I take it over midseason. So if guys graduate, I'm making additions. And then once we have our big midseason update in August, I'm the one who takes over the reins there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just curious how you guys do that process. Cause yeah, it's tough. We cover one system and it's like, we still kind of miss on guys every now and then, and we try to get everybody. But when you got 10 on your plate, I can't imagine how tough it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun in some ways because you get to really get in the weeds on these 10. I mean, there are people out there who try to do all 30, and God bless them for it. My head spins on 10, I'll be honest with you. But that being said, I mean, like, you really get in the weeds with these guys, and then you see them all like I did on Saturday, and it's a lot of fun. My favorite part of this job is getting some info on somebody. I'm sure you guys love this part too. If you notice it before everybody else out there does. And it's, I live in Brooklyn. It's a little hipster of me to say this, but like getting to be the first one on this stuff is really neat. And I'm not saying I'm first, but being one of the first people to know about these guys is my favorite part of the job.
I've said that before to my friends. I was like, it's kind of like finding a cool band first. And he's like, yeah, but way less cool. I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. I still feel that way. So I get you.
I mean, it was the same thing with like Cole Keefe. I remember we made him number one pretty aggressively, and people were just wondering why. And just like, and this is even when he was injured. I just thought the body of work fed itself. And then it was just one of those things, especially when you look at a game, you're in that loud, like the sound, like when I remember seeing Vladimir Jr. in Lansing for the first time, and that sounded, it sounded different. And that was the same thing with Keith. So there's a couple, we have some listener questions that we got piping in here on YouTube and on Twitter as well. But I really like this question here. from Chris. When are we going to get a weekly minor league show on MLB Network? Minor Matters. He called it, in, like, I love it too. It's a sitcom name too. Minor Matters.
Come on.
That's a good name.
I like how you guys pose this question as if I'm the one who makes decisions on the network. I just appear there sometimes. Listen,
I want you to run it up.
If it was up to me, like, yeah, we would have a minor league show all the time. I mean, I've been talking to friends of mine in the industry of like, it would be great to have a Sports Center style show of minor league baseball highlights. Like there's during the season, there's 60 games happening a night. Like let's do a wraparound type situation. I would love for that. I think there's more interest in minor league baseball than there ever has been. I think the breakout stuff only proved that over the last week or so. So yeah, I would love it. I don't work in Secaucus. I don't work in that building. Wear their polo every once in a while. So I will pass along the consideration. I love hearing that people are interested in that. That's a great place to be.
It just always, you know, I've talked about this a number of times and not to disparage the network, but it's like, you know, if they're going to be showing Naked Gun or Mr. 3000 or whatever on Sunday night, like, you know, throw on some minor league highlights. It's like you said, there's so much that's happening in the course of a week in the minor leagues. There's so many games. There's tons and tons of highlights. And it would just be kind of fun. But I understand that it's still kind of a niche market, but it's your network.
I will say this, like there is more of an appetite over there for minor league coverage. They have done a better job of highlighting these guys. And, you know, I've talked to people over at the network and they're like, yeah, we know more about Jackson Churio, for instance, the Milwaukee Brewers, when he signed that contract extension 5 years ago. Maybe that extension doesn't get signed, but like something like that happens. Jackson Churio gets called up and everybody in the wider baseball network, not just MLB Network, but I mean, just baseball media at large will be throwing up their hands. Who is this guy? And they would come flooding to us or they would come flooding to other outlets or what have you and trying to research as much as they can on the fly. Now people really have opinions on these guys early. And I love that. I love everybody getting involved and like I said, having that appetite.
I think it was a big difference for us when it was weird when people started coming up to us at games and saying, recognizing us. And I thought that was bizarre to me because they're like, oh, we've seen you on Twitter posting clips, and we're just like, okay, cool. We had a lot of fun with it. So we need to get a question. We got one from on Twitter from Nick Splane. He asks, what specifics about Jose or Briseño's defense is causing concerns to stay behind the plate from bits of games you guys have seen, aside from being a Hulk in size?
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, right? He's also fairly young. He's only 19 years old, but he is big. He's 6'4" for a catcher, and you need to be nimble back there. You need to be able to block. You need to be able to move well. You need to have some arm strength. It's not quite there. They're working on that, and they think, you know, it is so early in his developmental stage that can kind of come around, but it's getting to the point where the bat might be ahead of the glove. And if, you know, he needs to be working at the glove at a single A level, but he's hitting at a high A level, how does that kind of work out? We'll see. I think he could still be valuable as a first baseman, to be honest with you, the way that he's already hitting for exit velocities. And I think that's only going to go up. He's obviously more valuable at catcher. He's going to get more time there. I don't think that decision is going to really come for maybe three more years, but because he is so big, he just needs to move a little bit better back there. And it's not quite there yet.
Yeah. And the thing we try to point out is kids don't generally get smaller from the age of 19 to 24 or so.
No.
They
normally get faster either. I mean, that's the other thing is that the guys tend to slow down, especially as they're going to add strength, which he's probably going to do over time.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you see it occasionally when somebody just, you know, becomes a workout hound or whatever. But yeah, a big kid like that, large frame, he's going to add weight, he's going to add muscle, and he probably will, you know, fingers crossed for Tigers fans, he'll start hitting the way you need a first baseman to hit, and it won't be an issue. Everybody wants, you know, this slugging catcher who's awesome, but I don't know, maybe a first baseman who's playing 155 games is just as valuable if he's going to hit you 30 home runs down the road.
Right, totally. I mean, and there is an opportunity for him to improve that, too. I'm not saying it's a lost cause by any means. I mean, not to say that he's this guy, but I also do the Mets system. Francisco Alvarez, the longest knock on him was that he wasn't a great framer. He could hit the ball a country mile, but could he stay at first base or could he stay a catcher? And what was his position? He's actually a little undersized compared to Briseño. But he's improved his framing to the point where he's an above average framer now at the major league level. The development hasn't stopped just because he made the show. So it's possible for that to happen. I'm not giving up on it by any means. I know the Tigers aren't, but those are the roadblocks in his way.
So the next question we got was from Phil Diamond on Twitter. He said, at what infield position will Kevin McGonigal most likely end up playing in the Tigers organization? I think it's too early to tell. I think he has a range to play short, but I mean, I still haven't seen it. Admittedly, I haven't seen enough to really gauge a strong opinion with it, but from what I've seen so far, he seemed like he played the position well.
Yeah, I think he's another guy where he's much more valuable at short than he is at second. It's second would be his secondary position if he has to move. I think they want to keep him at short for a very long time. It's going to be fascinating, though, to see how that Lakeland group kind of shakes out. And I was trying to get some info on this, but I was probably down there a little too early. You look at guys who are infielders who are probably still going to be in Lakeland, and like, where does Santana play? He probably still has to be in Lakeland. He's a shortstop. And McGonigal, I know he's coming off the hamstring. But when he's healthy, he should be getting the lion's share of starts at shortstop. Maybe they move those guys around a little early. I don't know. But I think they want him at short as long as they can, because if they get a plus hitter like him at short, that's a top 100 guy. I mean, that's going to happen. We just need to see a little bit longer of a resume. But he's kind of right on the cusp of the top 100 for me. Those are guys you want playing premium positions.
All right. Next question comes in from Rex, and it calls McGonigal, and he says, how much growth have you witnessed in Clark and McGonigal since the draft?
That's a good question. In terms of physical growth, Max Clark has always kind of been pretty muscle bound. That's always been his thing, is that there wasn't a ton of power in there in high school. Some evaluators thought it was below average power. Some believe he's going to add power as it comes along, but it's not a physical thing with him. He doesn't need to bulk out anymore. He's pretty, he's pretty muscle bound as it is. He's pretty built up. It's just approach stuff. So I think in terms of approach growth, like growth developmentally, one thing the Tigers are really excited about is that he's getting more into his backside and his swing, and that's going to allow the power to play. He just needs to see velocity more. The one thing that Ryan Garko said a lot when I talked to him about Max Clark is he was basically just surviving in Lakeland, mm-hmm. that small taste that they got him last year. Once he was starting to see mid-90s pretty regularly, it was a little eye-opening, and he was just up there trying to hack it and just be like, oh, I don't know, like, let me just throw the bat at the ball and see what happens. He's growing more comfortable with that. The fact that he's growing, I don't want to say growing into power, but like he's learning how to make that power play a little bit more. I think that's super exciting because, as you guys know, supremely athletic. Like, the guy's a no doubt center fielder. He's got a cannon of an arm. If he's a plus hitter with at least average power, I mean, that's a star in today's game. That's like something akin to Corbin Carroll with a better arm, maybe. I don't think Max Clark is going to get to that power level, but like that's the Corbin Carroll starter kit, which we just saw Arizona use that and make the World Series. So it's really interesting to see what's going to happen with him. Kevin McGonigal, I didn't get to see much of him in spring training because of the hamstring. I was actually super bummed that he didn't play in the breakout, because I was told he was looking really good and that they had him circled as like he's going to be even better known going into the spring. So I want to see what he's like coming off of that. And having lost a little bit of development time, a little bit of ramping up time. But that approach and that hitting ability is going to play anywhere, and I don't think that's going to be a big concern.
Yeah, especially because if you watch him against Clearwater in the playoffs last year, you wouldn't tell the kid was just right out of high school. I mean, he had some really good at-bats, working the counts. Right. And against even, I think, Clearwater, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they have a guy from rehab at a higher level?
I don't know if that was when Archie Bradley was pitching against them or not, but they did have, they were bringing some, fireballers in there, and to see these kids, squaring off against veterans was kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So next question we had is from Stando. He wants to know, where did you have Parker Meadows ranked?
So we have him ranked at number 6 right now. Just one spot below Ty Madden. Those are the first two guys off the top 100 for the Tigers. I think you can make a case for either of them belonging on the top 100. You can make a case for either of them at number 5. Parker Meadows, I think his climb last year was kind of what we were always expecting would happen eventually, but it took years for it to come around from him. The fact that he's so big at 6'5" and can run like he did, and obviously has been a special defender in the major leagues already and is going to be their opening day center fielder, it seems like, once again. How is the power going to play? It took years for that to kind of come around. It was nice to see that really take off the last 2 years between Toledo last year and 2022. I would just like to see more consistency in that development, but he's here now and he's major league ready. So if you wanted to make a case for him over Madden, I wouldn't argue you too hard. I just think Ty Madden, the depth of pitches, the amount of options that he has, the consistent success that he has dating back to Texas, he has number four upside, which is not always easy to develop.
Especially too last year, one of the things about Madden that was very a big thing that stepped up from last year was the ability to pitch against lefties, because that was a hard time where anytime you tried to locate inside of lefties, it seemed like they were just going and just opening it up and getting some power on them. But that was something, especially him towards the tail end of the postseason and Erie's run, I thought Ty Madden did a really good job of establishing himself on the better part of the inside corner, because the big hangup, correct or wrong, Sam, coming out of Texas was his fastball. How's that was going to play? And those little adjustments. I know the org's done some adjustments with his windup a little bit, but it just seemed like last year he put it together with his fastball.
Yeah, I mean, it's always kind of been fastball shape for him. Was a big concern, and that's something you've heard a lot more about in the last 5 years. I think Ty Madden gets drafted 10 years ago, he probably goes a lot higher, but those concerns about shape caused him to drop where he did to 32nd overall. The fact that he's manipulated a little bit better and he has that plus slider and he's got a decent change in curveball, he has multiple options that he can go to now to kind of keep lefties at bay. And like you said, fastball shape is a bigger concern against opposite side bats. You really need to elevate it against them a little bit better. So he's made some strides in that. I'm hopeful that he's going to make his major league debut at some point this year. It's just, you look at this Tigers rotation now and like, there's not even enough spots for the major league options that they have. So he'll get plenty of run at Toledo, and we'll see. We'll check in with things in a few months, but I'm hopeful he'll get there eventually.
And the other question too, this is another guy, and this is a guy that we've talked about quite a bit. This is an unfair question because I think based off his age, so we're not going to just, I'm just going to ask this in terms of, I know Roberto Campos' biggest thing is trying to get more loft into his swing, but being around camp, Sam, Campos last year struggled a little bit. He struggled defensively. I mean, Brady Allen last year coming in and really kind of, I think Brady Allen really helped out the West Michigan defense last year. But it just seemed like Campos got to a really good start, and they just kind of went quiet a little bit. Yeah, I know he had injuries, but Campos, I don't want to say make or break, but it seems like his profile's dropped a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tough to say make or break for a 20-year-old. Right. But for somebody who's supposed to have above average power, he's put together back-to-back 5-homer years, which you can't keep doing that and keep saying like, just wait, it's going to come. Like it does actually need to arrive. Now I will say he does not lack for confidence. He told Jason Beck the other day, he's aiming for a 20-homer season. That's 4 times as many homers as he hit in 2023. It's certainly possible. Like you said, if he adds loft, the above average raw power is in there for him to get to it. And if he does, then he solidifies his place on the top 30. Where we have him right now is 25. And that's slipping. It's constantly been slipping over the last few years for him. And if that power doesn't actually realize this year, then he's probably coming off the top 30 once the draft happens. So it needs to arrive this season. He's probably going to be back in West Michigan, Midwest League, as you guys know, not always the best place for a power hitter. But the fact that he's aiming for 20 home runs, let's see it. I want to see it. And, all the credit for him for having that confidence, but it is a little bit of his prospect status sitting on a string right now.
Yeah. I imagine if he gets 15 home runs in the Midwest League, he's hitting the last 5 in the Eastern League.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Because
yeah.
If he's hitting like that, then yeah. He's a guy that, we've seen a lot of hard contact from him, but it's generally not in the air where it needs to be, which is, we asked him about it last year and he said his job was just to hit the ball hard. So I don't know if he's changed at all, or if he's, you know, I'm sure they're working with him on it in some capacity.
I will say elevation is one of the last things to come from some of these power hitters. I mean, even talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. back in the day, like he was always a really good hitter, and he, part of that was the loud exit velocities, but in the minor leagues, he was struggling to elevate the ball. That eventually came. Now it's kind of struggling again, but I think it's tougher to add strength than it is to add loft. That, like, if you get somebody with his strength now, I'd much rather try to build on that and add loft than somebody who's always hitting in the ball and it's, or hitting the ball in the air, but it's going 275. Like, I can only tell you to go in the weight room, and that's not going to work. So I think that's an adjustment that can be made, but it needs to be made.
Yeah. And then we talked about Christian Santana is kind of the opposite, where everything he hits is up in the air and it's too steep. And it's like, how do you got to bring that down a little bit? But because he seems to have the approach and maybe the raw power, but you know, something about those pop flies don't really help you out with the batting average.
Right. And it's difficult to teach that now. That's one thing I'm fascinated to talk to player development folks and Tigers all around. Like, how do you talk to your young players about all the data that's out there? It essentially becomes homework for these guys, because you're just throwing, you can throw everything at them and hope they sort it out. You can give them little bits of information which aren't telling the whole picture. How do you do that? Do you spoon feed it? Do you provide everything and let them ask questions? So for Christian Santana, like, for him, if he's being told, hey, the best thing you can do is hit the ball hard and in the air, and he continually keeps hitting the ball in the air, he's like, I'm doing half the job. What's the problem here? Mm-hmm. Well, when you bat 156, that's the problem. Like, that's, we don't want you just hitting the ball and turning them into easy catchable balls. So it's still early for him. I'll take a guy with a 365 OBP. Like, that's something you can build around. The power is obviously there. It's just, we got to find a happy medium with Christian Santana, because he might be one of the most maddening prospects I have to evaluate. I will say that much.
Yeah, I mean, between him and, I think another guy I would put up in that category is Dylan Dingler. And I say that only because from an offensive standpoint only. I mean, defensively, since we saw him at West Michigan make his debut, he had two or three back picks in one game. Like, we knew the ability there. But then there was sometimes last year in Erie where after he came back and the rotation got significantly better, talking to some of the folks in Erie, how much of a difference he made to that rotation and having that veteran presence. But then you see him having a bat where he strikes out on three pitches that are just, you know, and you're just wondering, it's almost like, you know, the athleticism is there, you know, he has the ability to barrel it up. When he barrels it up, he does smoke the ball. So it's, I don't know. I don't want to say, or I'm not trying to say the same thing about Dingler. Same. I know that Hinch has expressed that he wishes he was further along, but I don't know. It seems like it's very good. This is a kind of a pivotal year for him in the system.
Yeah. And I think the big thing is he needs to be healthy. I mean, he's been dinged up consistently, and it's tough to develop an approach on the pro side. You're just missing at bats. Like, the athleticism, like you said, that's been there since his college days. He was an outfielder, like, that, who got moved behind the plate. And I was talking to Gibson Long the other day about this, of what is it like to have Dylan Dingler behind the plate? And he's like, you get so much more confident. Like, he wasn't going to name names, but he's like, I've thrown to catchers, and you know they're fighting for their life back there. And if that's happening, then I don't trust where my stuff's going. Like, I'm not going to try to bounce a pitch because I don't think you're going to block it. And then my stuff becomes worse, especially with somebody with his breaking stuff. But with Dylan Dingler back there, I become a better pitcher because I can throw whatever I need to, and I know he's going to get me. And if I get somebody on first base, it's going to be a difficult steal for them because I got him behind the plate. So there is a good effect on him, and I do think he has a major league career because of that. It's probably as a second catcher, but I just want to see him healthy. I want to see him get those at-bats and improve that approach. It's coming off the elbow issue. Hopefully that's in the past for him. It's nice to see him out there for a couple innings on Saturday. And, yeah, he just needs those upper-level looks.
Yeah, that's where – I'm hoping that this year he kind of puts it together, and the Tigers, in terms of the catching depth right now, they seem like they have a ton of catchers that they're trying to find out. It turns even with Alfonso, and there's even – that's what they're – I'm kind of concerned about their depth below high A a little bit, but that's just, you know, again, just because we had Brady – what's that?
Chaconic.
Yeah, Chaconic, who's out with injuries. It just seems like their depth right now, there's it was, a little lacking.
It was kind of fun to see, you know, Josh Crouch was a guy who had a really big 2022 season, and we were right. impressed with him, and then he got up to double A, and it kind of, you know, slammed into a brick wall a couple times and just had a rough year last year. So it was, and he wasn't even invited originally to the spring breakup, but it was cool to see him get a big 2-run double there. Just maybe having a bounce back there, but I know he's a guy that's been working, you know, with his catching and framing and all that stuff, but he's slid down the prospect a little bit, but I don't know. That was another fun thing about the spring breakout, is just seeing some of these other guys kind of pop in and do their thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that it, in theory, it should be all top 30 prospects, but that's just not how organizations work. We don't rank to have one second baseman, one third baseman, one first baseman. We're not trying to fill out a roster when we do our top 30. So there's going to be other guys, and because of injuries, like to Kevin McGonigal, for instance, who need to fall off, and the other people can step up and take their place. And Josh Crouch, I think that was perfect for him. I mean, he probably would admit, coming off 2023, he could use a confidence boost. And then you put him in the big league stadium, and he comes through like he did. That's something he might carry with him for a while. I mean, most players I talked to about the breakout, they took real pride in representing their teams on that day and getting to wear the major league uniform and getting to play in the big league stadium. So, you know, that's the type of confidence boost that Josh Crouch needs. Now let's see what happens if he returns to Erie.
Yeah, speaking of Erie, by the way, and the last question for the evening is, I mean, it seems like the Erie has enough talent to win. Do you think they could win the Eastern League Championship again? I know it's a loaded question. I mean,
it is a loaded question. It is a fool's errand to try to predict minor league championships in March. I will say that. Yeah. Listen, last year's team was super fun. I do think the Tigers have good depth pitching wise, and there's only so many guys who can go into Toledo, and there are only so many guys who can go to Detroit, and that's going to start backing up, right? There's probably going to be somebody starting in Erie who's going to hate that he's starting in Erie, because he should be out of there, and that's just the nature of the beast. I think they could be really good in the first half. I'm sure Jackson Jobe's going to be there. That's going to be special. We're all going to be watching that. I think that's the first time we've said his name all night, by the way.
Yeah, he wasn't in the spring breakout.
He wasn't in the spring breakout.
But
he was in the booth with us.
And yeah, that was cool, yeah.
That was very cool.
Yeah.
Getting him to react to Jace Young. I kind of wanted to ask him, how would you pitch to Jace Young, but I don't think he would give me that.
That was the most natural, like, it was just like, oh.
Yeah, right. Because I'm sure as a pitcher, you get scared by any home run you see. And that was just a very natural, he's just like, oh wait.
Right in the middle. That was fantastic. But I think the most, like, we've had Ryan Garko on, but it was just, and Ryan Garko too, the one thing about him that I really enjoyed is the fact that he makes sure, he always just, he's such a team guy, you know, and like he gives attribution to a lot of these guys. I mean, you're talking, there's so many different little things that go on as levels where, like, for example, one of the things that we're at the West Michigan press conference last year, the first thing that Young and Pacheco say about what's different is nutrition. And it's like these little things that add up to make a big difference. And hearing Gargo go into detail about that, I thought that was a really, really, really good way to blend in the broadcast there.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to harp on him about, and I did this for our spring training report as well, is you look at this organization, and the reason why they jumped to number 5 in our farm system rankings is because, to a man, like, everybody in the top 15 had an arrow up last season. It's really difficult, except for like maybe a Dylan Dingler, but Dylan Dingler slid down the spectrum. It's really difficult to find a Tigers player who had a bad year. I mean, even Jackson Jobe, when you thought the back injury would be a problem, he shoved in the second half and got healthy. Keith, we got to see what he was like when he was healthy. They're putting in the right processes to develop these guys as individuals, which I think is huge. One thing Garko said to me was, hey, listen, we know what guys' weaknesses are, but we're not going to take away from their strengths to address their weaknesses. If you're Max Clark and we know you're a plus hitter, keep being a plus hitter for a while. Like, we'll make some tweaks to get more out of that power, but we're not going to force you into the weight room to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And all of a sudden you can't hit the ball anymore because you're not focused on that. They are really honed in on their player strengths, try to illuminate those as much as they can, bringing them out as much as they can. And that's how you have like 7th rounders becoming top 30 prospects. They do that to a player. Now we'll see what happens next. Like, Colt Keith is going to graduate. Like I said earlier, Parker Meadows is going to graduate. It becomes a little bit tougher. You get guys who are, it's a little bit more of a long haul development. But I think they really enjoy that. I think they really like seeing these guys jump level to level with the success they've had over the last few years.
Especially a guy like Montero. I mean, Montero is a prime example.
He's the perfect example of this for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was, when we watched him last in Michigan a couple of years ago, relieving, kind of didn't seem like he had a plan. And then hearing Garco basically say, we're putting the instructions in Spanish for him. And then just knowing that they recognize it in the spin data, okay, he has a good slider. And then last year, he put it together and jumped up three levels. And that was something as much as I've been following the system since, God, since Tiger Stadium, I mean, it was weird to see jumps like that, multiple players at three levels. It's not, this is a system that, you're talking about, when I think of Boston in the 90s and some of like just into the 2000s a little bit, like they had some really good prospect calls. The Tigers, outside of the draft class of 75, 76, this is, historically speaking, this is the reason why I get so excited. I've never witnessed anything like this, where it's multiple. It's not just one, two players. It's not your Omar Infantes. I mean, I know just using an example like that, but Brandon Inge, it's not like that. It's real development. And it just sounds strange to think that we're evolving into the modern times, and now we're getting a farm system that is a buzz and a number five on your guys' system. And that says a lot, because MLB Pipeline does, you guys do such a great job of breaking down these prospects, and you guys are not going to, rankings don't mean, or people are going to say, well, rankings don't mean anything. It's all the development, but still number five, but with going all up, that's progress to me.
Yeah, no, I know. And like, since I've done this job, I think of Tiger systems of the past, and this is the very recent past, and I'm not breaking any news here, but like, there was a time where Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson were in the system, and Casey Mize was in the system, and those guys papered over a lot of cracks, right? Like, when you have those number one overall picks or those top five picks, you can look at it and be like, okay, so there are some potential stars here, and that's great. And that's kind of all we're looking for here, is just to get some homegrown stars. Now the Tigers have that, but they also have guys who could end up being like a Parker Meadows, end up being your starting center fielder for years to come. He's not going to be an all-star necessarily, but he's going to be valuable. He's turned into a legit starting center fielder. That's difficult. Those guys don't grow on trees. You're not able to find them everywhere. I just love the way that they've developed their depth. That's what really pushed it over the edge for me. It's good to have four top 100 prospects. It's good to have the number three overall pick in Max Clark, but the fact that you have to go deep into the teens until I look at this list and be like, I don't know about that guy's major league prospects. That's huge. Like I said, covering 10 of these systems and having knowledge at least somewhat of all 30, it's not every system is like this by any means.
Oh. So what's coming up for you this week? What do you got going on, and how are you going to end the spring training before the regular season starts?
Yeah, so I am getting caught up on spring training reports. We've been doing those on MLB Pipeline. It's basically, what is the main storyline in each farm system of this spring? And then so we break it down into other categories, like breakout candidate or spring standout, somebody who's doing something different, or something new. Or another category we have is something to prove, like who is out there. So I had like Wilmer Flores is somebody out there with something to prove. It was after last year's dip, him showing up the way he has, in better shape, with better velocity. Tick that box pretty easily for me. So doing a lot of that, I co-host the Show Before the Show podcast, the official podcast of minor league baseball. We're coming out on Fridays like we always do. I'm really excited for that one this week. We'll be breaking down all the spring breakout action on that. And then it's just, hopefully we're going to get rosters soon. It's kind of crazy how AAA opening day is just next week. Yeah. So we'll get those rolling in. We'll get all the other rosters rolling in and see where guys are. I'm excited to be surprised. I know it sounds weird to say that as a reporter, but every year there's somebody who gets aggressively pushed up higher up the chain than we expected. And I love that type of stuff. So that's right around the corner.
Yeah. Toledo opens next Friday against
Nashville, I think.
No, they're at home. They're hosting at home.
I think they're playing Nashville.
They're playing Nashville. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, they're sitting there at Nashville. Yeah, looking forward to that. And there's going to be – we're going to be doing some stuff. We're going to be changing up our top 30. Lyle Lockhart Jr. It's going to be number 30 on a prospect report dropping tomorrow or Friday. Just got to finish it up. But, Sam, thank you so much for taking the time this evening to talk to us. And we look forward to talking again soon. And I'm sure we're going to cross paths at some point throughout the season.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for everything you guys do. I mean, I love chatting prospects with everybody, but especially people who cover the game as well as you guys do. So thanks so much for having me. And yeah, I'll catch you guys out there sometime soon.
Appreciate that, Tim.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.